Now think of some of the prices I've already given you for goods. One chicken would eat up more than a soldier's monthly pay as you get toward the middle of the war. The men fought, in effect, for free. And as we've seen before, they also fight indefinitely. They're in the war for the duration, and they're making wages that really are beside the point. And their families suffered tremendously in their absence. Wives and children did their best to keep small farms operating, but thousands of pathetic letters from wives begging their absent husbands to return home to look after the farm or business still exist in archives across the United States. One wife wrote in December 1864, "We haven't got nothing in our house to eat but a little bit of meal. Try to get off and come home and fix us all up some, and then you can go back. If you put off a coming, there won't be no use, for we'll all be out there in the garden in the graveyard with your ma and mine." Now, these kinds of letters were a powerful stimulus for desertion as the war went on. This kind of letter confronted a soldier with the awful dilemma of choosing the Confederacy, his country, his patriotic duty, over the needs of his family, the dire needs of his family. One Alabama soldier wrote to his wife in October 1863 that he would try to get a furlough to come home and help with their children. Failing in that, he said in this letter, he would desert. "I can't stand to hear," he wrote simply, "that you and the children are suffering for bread." As inflation climbed, the Confederate economy became more and more based on barter. People simply did without many things. They did without coffee for the most part and tried all kinds of really awful-sounding substitutes for coffee. They would grind up things, parch things, boil them. None of them tasted good, but they tried them. They did without high-grade cloth for the most part. They did without paper. If you read soldiers' letters, Confederate soldiers' letters, you'll see that they're often on captured paper from Union soldiers. You'll have a Confederate soldier writing home on a piece of paper with a patriotic Northern letterhead. Confederate soldiers would try to make use of every bit of the paper. They'd write one way, and then they'd turn their page and write the other way, and sometimes turn it a third and write diagonally. So you'd have three sets of writing going across one page. They're very difficult to read. But people did without these kinds of things and without innumerable other things as well. Congress mandated, Confederate Congress, in the spring of 1863, what was called a tax in kind. 10% of all corn, wheat, rice, potatoes, peas, beans, and many other products must go to the Confederate government, said this legislation. It was not too hard on planters, but on the thousands of marginal farmers who lived almost hand to mouth, this was devastating. It was a way to collect something that was actually usable rather than worthless paper money. Confederacy could get some goods this way that they could use. The Impressment Act of 1863 added even more to this burden. This allowed the government to come in and take whatever it needed in return for government paper money. It could take horses, could take mules, could take crops if the government needed them, and give people a receipt that was good for paper money that would do them virtually no good. This kind of legislation alienated untold Confederates who became very unhappy with their government. Many of them said that it seemed to them that the Yankees couldn't do them any more harm than their own government was doing. The government tax collectors and impressment agents became very unpopular figures in the Confederacy. But that didn't mean, I hasten to add, that these people who were unhappy with impressment and who were unhappy with the tax in kind wanted the Confederacy to fail. I think a lot of historians mistakenly have gone from the one to that conclusion. They're unhappy with the tax in kind. They're unhappy with impressment. They must not care whether the Confederacy achieves independence or not. I don't think that's right. I think they were unhappy with many of these things, but they were willing to put up with them to a significant degree, perhaps evade them if they could in some ways, while still hoping that the Confederacy would achieve its independence. Well, as this brief survey has suggested, I hope, in both its politics and its economy, the Confederacy struggled with serious problems that made it more difficult to maintain a strong war effort. Next time, we'll continue our look at the Confederate home front. We'll examine the problem of white refugees and also the growing civilian disaffection behind the lines as the war went on.